ജയം വിഷുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയം. നിത്യലീല പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തരശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാഷ്ട്രയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശിലഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട് രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമിക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസീദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗോർ പ്രേമാനന്ദി. ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ്, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ്, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബിൾ ഡിവോട്ടീസ്, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു എൻ ഗൗരംഗ, ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശ്രീല പ്രഭുപാദ്. നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലെ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നിധി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ. സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണി. ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ, ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ, ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ. സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധര ഭവാർണവാൻ. ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷ കൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാ നാഥ മുക്തിർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ. മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ. ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി പാദയോർസ്തവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശാ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യത പ്രഭോ. നാമസങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യാ സർവപാപ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനത്തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം. ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയാദിതരതശ്ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൻ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തിയൽ സൂരയ. തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷ ധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തവുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി. ധർമ്മപ്രോജ്ജിത ഗൈതവോത്ര പരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണം സദാം വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം. ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനി കൃതേ കിം വാപരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതിഭി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭി തൽക്ഷണാൽ നിഗമകൽപ്പതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുഖമുഖാദമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം. മുഹുരഹോരസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഹ സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായ വിശ്വോൽപ്പത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാ. ഇയം പ്രവ്രജന്തമനുപേതമപേതകൃത്യം ദ്വൈപായനോ വിരഹകാതരമജുഹാവ പുത്രേദിതന്മൈതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം. മുനിം ആനതോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖിലശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിഥിദീർഷതം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനുമുപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം. നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേൽ. കമനീയ കിശോര മുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണുക്കുണിതാദൃദാനനേന്ദോ മമ വാചി വിചൃംബദാം മുരാരേ മധുരീം നക്കനികാഭി കാവികാഭി. നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലെ ശ്രീമദേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നിധി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ. സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷാ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണി ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമ. വന്ദേ നന്ദം വ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ടം ഹരിഗതോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദി ഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാധവേ നമ. പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദരമന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശമനിശം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി. കോമളം കുജയൻ വേണും ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യവരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ. മുഖം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാദമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാ മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണി ഭഗവതി അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനി അമ്പത്വാമനുസന്ധദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണി നമോസ്തു വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഫുല്ലാരവിന്ദായതവത്രനേത്ര യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപാം പ്രപന്ന പാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകപാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമ സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സസുധീർഭോക്താ ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവ സുതം ദേവം കംസച്ചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രഥജലാ ഗാന്ധാര നീലോൽപലാ ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതി കൃപേണ വഹനീ കർണേന വേലാകുല അശ്വത്ഥാമ വികർണ ഘോരമകരാ ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സോത്തീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദി കൈവർത്തക കേശവ പാരാശര്യവജ സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനക കേസരം ഹരികഥാ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജന ഷൽപദൈരഹരഹ പേബീയമാനം മുദ ഭൂയാദ് ഭാരത പങ്കജ കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മുഖം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാദമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാവരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുദസ്ത്വന്നൊന്തി ദിവ്യൈ സ്തവൈർ വേദൈ സാംഗമതേ ക്രമ ഉപനിഷദേർ ഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഹ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം നോ വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ സോ വി വർ ഡിസ്കസിംഗ് യെസ്റ്റർഡേ അപൗരുഷേയത്വം ഓഫ് വേദം. This word apaurushayatvam means that's not apaurushayatvam means not humanly possible, humanly impossible, that is. So that is the position given to the Vedam, apaurushayatvam, right? And we saw yesterday out of the six Vedangam, Shiksha, Jyotisham, Kalpam, വ്യാകരണം, നിരുക്തം, ഛന്ദസ്, ഔട്ട് ഓഫ് ദി സിക്സ് ഓൾ ഓഫ് ദം ടുഗദർ കീപ് ദി വേദംസ് ഇൻടാക്ട്. ദ ആർ ദ സപ്പോർട്ടിംഗ് പില്ലേഴ്സ് ഓഫ് ദ വേദം. ദിസ് വേദാംഗം ദ ആർ കോൾഡ്. ലൈക് വി ഹാവ് ഇൻ അവർ ഹ്യൂമൻ ബോഡി ഡിഫറെന്റ് പാർട്സ്, ഹാൻഡ്സ്, ലെഗ്സ്, ഐസ്, ഇയേഴ്സ്. ഇൻ ദാറ്റ് വേ ഡിഫറെന്റ് എലിമെന്റ്സ് ഓഫ് ദ ബോഡി ഓഫ് ദ വേദപുരുഷ. വേദപുരുഷ മീൻസ് ഇഫ് യു കമ്പയർ വേദം ആസ് എ ഫോം, ഇൻ എ പർട്ടിക്കുലർ ഫോം, his different parts are these different Vedangam. We have talked about all that. So yesterday we saw about Kalpam also, what Kalpam does. That means all the Yagam, Yajnam, Homam, all the Vaidika Karmam, wherever Karmam is involved, the execution of that Karmam on a strict order based on the Mantram in the Vedam is done through the Kalpam, Kalpa Sutram. Kalpa Sutram is the way it controls, through the sutrams of the Kalpam, it controls the different ceremony, different rituals in the Vedam. And that is what Kalpam does. Again, we mentioned about the arguments against Vedam due to ignorance only, how people have brought forward different arguments. And the reason for that we have discussed yesterday. There are many things in the Vedic tradition which are generally people find it difficult to accept due to our own poor education. That is the reason behind that. Like you can see in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada also mentions in many places that the swan has a capacity to separate the milk and the water. isn't it? You know, that's how it is. So sometimes devotees have got this doubt, how is that possible? What is the technology behind it? They want to understand that. So this question comes up always, that what? How do you separate milk and water? How does the swan do that? There must be some technology behind it. What the difficulty is this, that because our education has been done through this technology way, or with technology as the important thing in life, we think that Krishna also needs this technology to do things. This way our mind has become, the mindset has become like that. Basically what it is, and they were asking, is there any reference anywhere how the Hamsam separates the water and the milk? This question is come. If you observe the nature, leaving behind all the technology, you will see there is so many phenomena here for which you can't give any explanation to that. Antaryami inside each and every living entity gives a certain power Krishna has given to Antaryami through that particular body to function. Like there is no technology in that. What it is that Hamsam has got this special power to separate milk and water. It's a power given to the Hamsam by the creation itself, by Krishna's arrangement, as Antaryami inside Krishna has the capacity to allow the Hamsam to separate milk and water without any technology. It does that. There are many things in this world, if you observe, in the same way you can see. The eagle, for example, 2 to 3 miles away from the ground, it can see a dead body lying on the ground. In the Shastram they call it as Gradradrishti. Gradradrishti means from such a long distance, its eye is so powerful that it is able to observe things what is lying on the ground here, few miles away from the ground. We don't have that capacity. Other birds don't have the capacity. Only the eagles have this capacity. Now, if you go to inquire about, oh, there must be some technology behind it, is the lens that the eagle is using is more powerful than our lenses are? It's not like that. This is the main difference between the people who gone through this technology education, what they find it so difficult to understand from Bhagavatam. They find it very hard. That because this, we believe everything in technology, technology, technology. Only technology. Krishna doesn't need any technology. Krishna can get things happen for a particular body as Antaryami. He can perform, allow that particular living being to act in some special ways which normally doesn't exist with other living entities. So this kind of power is already invested in the particular form of that body, and that is due to Krishna's arrangement. In the same way, you can see so many things in life if you look at. For example, the cow. Cow, you give the grass to the cow and it supplies the milk from that. How would you explain this process? Suppose we give grass to the scientist, will they be able to create milk in that way? Like the way cow is producing the milk. That is Krishna's special energy invested in the cow. That cow has got this nature, then just by supplying the grass, the cow is able to produce milk and give it to us. The most valuable form of food for everybody to survive, for their survival. So these are special powers given to different living entities by Krishna's arrangement. It has nothing to do with technology. Technology has no meaning here. So many things if you observe in the nature, you will find in the trees, many, many medicinal trees, special trees. Each and every plant has its own medicinal properties in Ayurveda. And where did this special property? Krishna has invested that in that plant. There is a particular plant from which a lot of medicine is extracted. I don't know the Sanskrit name for that, but that from that plant, the amount of that plant is used, and it is nothing. It just grows everywhere. It just grows freely. If you go into the forest and look for them, you'll find it so many places. So, but it is important element in manufacturing the many special medicines and which are used for curing certain illnesses which cannot be cured otherwise. So, where does this? So, similarly, Krishna has invested certain ability or certain capacity in certain living entities. That is Krishna's one of the vibhuti. This is one of the vibhutis of Krishna. that different persons, different living entities, different species have got different capacities. Like we mentioned before, the birds have got the capacity to fly, is it not? So birds have got a body, but the ability to fly, bird, we may think that, oh, what is the technology the birds have got? They've got the wings, therefore they are flying. It's not due to the wings alone the birds are flying. Birds are flying because Krishna inside a Santharyami for each bird has given this capacity to fly for birds. That is a general principle behind that. It is not due to technology that Krishna gets things done. This misconception has to go from our mind first. And this doubt keeps coming back all the time. People are asking this question, how is this done? How is that done? Is nothing is required for that. Krishna is there, that's all it is. There's no other technology more than that. But only if you observe these things, you will find that our way of education and our way of thinking has to change. That is where things are going wrong. We start looking at things, everything must be a technique behind it. And this technology controls us to such an extent. And so, coming back to this, yesterday we were discussing this, that to talk about the rishis who have given us this, Upanishads and also other Vaidya Samhita, everything, that they were very particular about certain things in life. And if their intention was, as we mentioned, khyadi, labham or puja, if the intention was that they wanted name and fame, or they wanted to acquire some wealth from that, or if they wanted some worship from the followers, if that was the intention, then the way they would have lived their life would have been different. Because generally, what you find in this world, people who have the desire for these things, which one? Khyadi, labham and puja, which means name and fame, and profit from that, or want to acquire wealth through those means, or respect from the society, will be worshipped by others, things like that, they won't not necessarily do the things properly. They will tell others to do it, but they themselves will tell others and they'll go and sleep. They won't do anything on their own. But that is not what you find in the life of the rishis. Whatever they have spoken, they were very particular and they were very meticulous about it in doing things by themselves. That is what you find in all the Vedic literature. Almost all the rishis, wherever you come to know about their lifestyle, what do you find? They live that life what they have taught to their disciples. They live that life themselves. So if their intention was to get name and fame or to make money or to be worshipped by others, normally a person won't do that because that nature will be different, their nature. It is a cheating nature will be there. But you don't find that cheating nature in the rishis, right? So, therefore, to say that these personalities who have migrated from somewhere else and came to Bharatavarsham and settled there, and their way of life was such that they didn't have anything else to do, so therefore they have compiled these Vedic hymns in order to keep themselves busy or occupied. If that's the way people have interpreted these things, but because we do not know the life they led at that time, what was their way of life, so you have to go back into that period of life, that period of time in the history, their way of life you have to study first before you make a judgment about their activities. Unless you go back into history to their times and study everything about their way of life, you shouldn't make a judgment about what they have created in the Shastram, what they have given us in the form of Shastram. You can see here that general tendency is that if their intention was to cheat others, they won't be doing it themselves. But the fact that they were doing it very rigorously and very strictly is an indication that they had a total faith in what they were doing. Otherwise they wouldn't be doing that, right? So there are a lot of things about it, right? As I mentioned yesterday also, that so many karmam spoken in the Vedam, various karmam spoken in the Vedam, right? And when you look at it, grahasthas have got, particularly the householders, they have been given such a huge list of karmam to be observed. If you want to have a list, just a glimpse of that, if you look into the 7th canto, you will find brahmachari dharmam, grahastha dharmam, Sri Narada Maharshi talking to Yudhishthira about it. So from that itself you understand that of course we don't follow those things today. That is a different story altogether. What you have to look at it this way, that if a grahastha has to live in this world following those karmam, what was prescribed for them, for the brahmachari, for the grahastha, vanaprastham, sannyasam, that dharmam is spoken in the 7th canto. And that is ideal householder, ideal brahmachari, ideal vanaprastham, ideal sannyasi. So we are not doing that. That is a different story. That's our problem. That's not their problem. But how the rishis have instructed these things, and if you look carefully, you will find the grahastha has got the maximum duty in life compared to everybody else. Brahmachari, vanaprastham and sannyasam, as far as rituals and daily activities are concerned, has less responsibility than the householder. Householder has been given the highest maximum duty, maximum activities, right? So many karmam given to the householder to perform, and it has come down to such a level now, some of them are just the sandhyavandanam alone, that's all, the very minimum is what is being done. That too by few people, not all. Sandhyavandanam, right? So, this is the reason that to understand the dharmam, the only way to know about dharmam is from shastram. There is no other way. We talked about dharmam, what dharmam means yesterday, isn't it? Dharmam is, to understand dharmam, you need Vedam. There is no other way to know dharmam. How will you know dharmam without Vedam? So, Vedam and Dharma Shastra Grantham, all the other literature associated with Vedam, will talk about the injunctions or how one should follow dharmam. And that is why Sri Shukha Brahmashi is saying here that Kalautad Hari Kirtanam. In Kali Yugam, that dharmam is Hari Kirtanam, glorifying Krishna, chanting the holy name. And this is given as the dharmam for Kali due to our inability to execute all other things. We are just not capable of doing that. So they have these mahalmas in that time, that they followed the things themselves and they told others to follow that. If their intention was to cheat others, they would have told others to do it and they would have kept themselves without that, without doing it. But you can see here that they didn't have that nature. That was not their nature. They followed themselves and they instructed others to follow. Right? So, now, if you take that, they have written these things with the interest of cheating others. Because these are arguments against the Vedam from the modern historians and people who are judging the Vedam. This is their arguments, right? That if you say that they have written all these things down to cheat others, there is no logic in that. Why? Because what you find in the modern world is that where there is a lot of cheating in spiritual field, people don't do themselves anything. They tell others to do it. But you don't find that with the rishis and all those who gave us this shastram. Right? So, when you look at their life, you see they lived a life of austerity, all the rishis. They spend their time in the forest, giving up all their attachment to home, family. Rather, they spend the time in the forest. Even though some of them were householders, the lifestyle was such, they were satisfied with acquiring the fruits and simple food, what was available in the forest, and they maintained their body that way. They did not look for any kind of luxurious way of life. That was their lifestyle, that you find all the time in the history, is it not? So the rishis did not, you always read about that, they ate the fruits and other things, roots, or what is available in the forest, and they lived like that, and that is how, but they were knowledgeable about how performing these sacrifices, yagam, homam, yajnam, and all other things, right? You will also see, if you read the old stories, books, or if they read the Puranams, most of the Puranams will find, wherever they will start the story like this, once upon a time there was a poor Brahmana who lived in a village like that. Every time they will make sure that this word poor is used with the Brahmana. They, rarely you will find spoken other way. That's the way it is. That means that this adjective poor will be there with the word Brahmana. Why was it like that? What was the reason for that? Right? So, what it is indicating is that their life was always poor. They were not rich. They were always poor. You will never find, when there is a wealthy Brahmana, it was like in the case of Bhikshugita, you saw, that Shukha Brahmashi, Krishna says that story to Uddhava. Krishna is saying, in Avanti there was a rich Brahmana. He says, Krishna himself is feeling bad about it, to say about a Brahmana rich. Imagine that. Krishna is feeling bad to talk about a Brahmana as rich, because it is a misnomer. It's against the principle. But if you say there lived a poor Brahmana, it's not taken wrong. It's acceptable. But if you say there was a rich Brahmana lived somewhere, question will come, how? How can it be? He's not a Brahmana there. So from these things, you can observe from the stories in the Puranams, you will notice that the Brahmana means he carries poverty with him throughout life. He's willing to accept that, voluntarily accepting poverty in life. That is his strength. That tapasya, that is called a tapasya. As far as Brahmana is concerned, that acquiring wealth in the world itself is wrong. The highest, best austerity is not to acquire wealth. But due to prarabdham, if wealth comes, immediately it should be given in charity. This is Brahmanyam. Brahmana principle is like that. First thing, they never believed in acquiring wealth. Because acquiring wealth is against their interests, against their spiritual interests. Therefore, acquiring wealth was not considered as important for them. But sometimes in life, like in the case of Bhikshu, that Brahmana, Bhikshugita Brahmana, due to his prarabdham, wealth had come. That was prarabdham for him. Somehow there was that vasana in him to acquire wealth, and his karma phalam or prarabdha karma phalam was such that wealth was coming to him. And he was also a miserly person. Isn't it? Bhikshugita, you remember when we studied about him. Due to all that, what happened to him in his life, it has become a problem for him later. And when all the wealth went left, All the wealth was taken away. Brahmana felt a big relief within himself. He says, in the Bhagavatam you will see there, he says he felt relieved himself from the burden of wealth. That burden of wealth, right? So the system was like this, that Shastram instructs, and because Brahmanas followed Shastram more than anybody else, they were knowledgeable in the Shastram, and you look at Vedic tradition itself, and all the Puranic stories and history behind it, you will observe this one thing, that they stuck to these things very strongly. Now, if it was written some stories for cheating others or misleading others, this wouldn't have happened, isn't it? They themselves were following it. Voluntarily, not accepting anything in this world, living a life of austerities and penances, and living so simple, and at the same time performing all the Vedic injunctions very strictly and practicing it in their own life. Now, how can you say that such a society were ignorant about life, or they have created a literature and Shastram for others with the intention of cheating others? So these arguments from the modern historians and modern analysts, if you want to call them like that, doesn't stand. It doesn't make any sense when they make these arguments. But unfortunately, when people themselves are not educated in these things, they get misled by all these things. They get misled by, and that is what is happening most of the time. So, the system was, Shastram says, better than acquiring wealth is not to acquire wealth. But if wealth comes, wealth should be used immediately for a noble purpose. This is the Shastram's understanding on this. Shastram always looks at wealth like this. From the Shastram viewpoint, from the Vedic viewpoint, that better not to acquire wealth unnecessarily, because in the process of acquiring wealth, you will do a lot of unnecessary things which should not be forbidden. Vikarmam will come. It is normal in this world that if you, in the process of acquiring wealth, vikarmam will come. But so the best thing is not to acquire wealth if you can manage without that. This is the Brahminical principle. But if by chance wealth comes, because that also sometimes you find in this world, wealth comes by chance. If it comes like that, then the best thing is to give it in charity and get yourself relieved from that. So this was the principle they have followed. So their austerity was, accept only that much what is necessary to maintain the body, not more than that. Anything acquired more than that, body will become a burden later in some form or the other. So So what they consider the better thing is not to acquire, rather than acquiring and then giving in charity. Better than that is not to acquire. This is the Vedic thinking, and this is what the rishis and the brahmanas, they followed this in their life through. You can see from this, the modern thinking is totally different, totally opposite. They haven't got a clue how far we have blown away from this. And these are the people who are judging the Vedic literature. So what will they understand? Without all the basic understanding of the Veda principles of the Vedic life, way of life, to make a judgment about that will be will be very difficult. That austerity, the strength of their austerity, isn't it? That's what they say. The wealth of the Brahmana is the strength of their austerities, right? Then so that is one thing. From that viewpoint, you can say there that khyadi, that was not their goal, or the name or fame was not their goal. Their goal was something higher than all these things. We are thinking that because due to our own poor understanding of things, we are making judgment about them in the wrong way, thinking that they have done all these things with this motive and that, all of such things, right? So then the other thing was that profit, if the intention was to, we think that everybody in this world is only living here to make money, isn't it? Once you get used to that thinking, We start thinking about everybody else, we look at them in the same way. How much money is he making? So everybody is thinking like this. And in a society like this, it's very difficult to understand all these principles on which Vedangam is spoken about it. Right? So, so immediately you have to look into this way, that the way of life they led throughout their time in this world was very much in accordance with what they have spoken to others. They never deviated from that, right? So, because they knew that that in order that others to follow them, that was their intention. When Vedavyas compiled the Vedam in the four, Gvedam, Yajurvedam, Samvedam, and taught to his disciples, Vedavyasa Maharshi's goal was, this knowledge should stay in this world forever. This is why he set up this system through the four rishis, Paila Maharshi, Vaishambhayana, Jaimini, and Sumandhu. In that way, the system, he created that. He was not thinking how much money I am going to make out of it. In the modern way, that's our greed and our mind has become like this. What can be done about that? But Maharshi's time, Vedavyasa Maharshi, his intention was this knowledge of the rishis should stay in this world. So therefore, whatever necessary to keep it going here, they were willing to sacrifice and do it themselves. And therefore, under any circumstances, they will not deviate from the principles what they have spoken and given to us, given to others, right? So, because if they do that, they knew that the world will not take them seriously. You won't take somebody seriously if that person himself, what he is talking about, he is not following it in life, is it not? So, that's the way it is. And so, the struggle they went through in their life, so much time they have devoted for this purpose, and get lot of suffering in life because of giving up their comfortable life in the villages and going to the forest, and whatever wealth they had, they have given up. Not for their happiness, but not to have a burden like that. And so many sense gratification which otherwise they could have had in this world, they gave it up. They gave up all that. And then followed all these strict rules and regulations and all these injunctions for the householders and the vanaprastham and sannyasi. What did they gain from that? Why did they do this? Right? So, you couldn't say that they have done it for the sake of wealth, because they have given up wealth all, what they had. From that itself you can understand that they were very genuine people, very serious and very sincere about it. And instead of acquiring wealth, what did they do? They gave up all the wealth what they had. Isn't it? So study the life of the rishis, then you will know these things. That they gave up the wealth what they had, gone to the forest to practice this what they were spoken, they have spoken to the rest of the world. Right? So, and ultimately what did they have? Only this material suffering in this world. Throughout the life they carried this. Suffering in material life. That means your life in this world is not very happy in many ways. It was very difficult, but they chose that path of their own. Chose their path of their own. So, there is interesting things about that. You see, the result of all austerities and penances, that you acquire pious piety from that. And if you acquire a lot of piety, naturally you are promoted to the higher planets, heavenly planets, isn't it? You go to the heavenly planets. Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita, he says, Tetam Bhuktva Sorgalogam Vishalam Shine Punyam Arthilogam Vishandi. When the Punyam runs out, then you come to Marthilogam, to earthly planet. Now look at this Rishi's situation. And that is why this is important, because Rishis, what they did, they practiced so much austerity in life, and with the result of their austerities and severe penances, they became so purified. That means, throughout their life, they were totally focused on following the Vedic injunctions, what is spoken in the Shastram. They rigorously followed that, right? And what happened to them? After following all these rules and regulations and strictly these injunctions, they got so purified inside, all the vasanas have gone from them. This is what will happen. All desires, vasanas, which is our impurity inside in us at the moment. So austerities and penances purifies a person. And due to their strict adherence to the injunctions in the Vedam, they got purified. And naturally, they were so pure that they were promoted to the higher planets. When they got there, this is a poem written by one famous Acharya about this. When they got there, the heavenly world is full of happiness there, isn't it? Sense gratification. Therefore, all the Apsaras women came there to receive them. Urvashi, Rambha, Tilottama, and all Menaka and all those great beautiful women of the heavenly planets came to receive them. But these people, because they were so pure, they didn't know how to deal with this situation. They didn't know how to interact with them. Because once the desires have gone from inside, the things what we consider as sense gratification today is not anymore a necessity for them. So jokingly it is said like this about them, that they went to the heavenly planets, and when they got there, they didn't know how to deal with the people there. It became so difficult for them how to interact with Urvashi and Rambha and Tilottama, because their hearts were so pure due to the following of the Vedic injunctions. So that is what spoken there. So, and therefore, so those who followed this, what did they gain from this, right? So, they didn't do it to say that they did all these things for not gaining anything, because there was a benefit. Benefit was purification. Purification within oneself. So all the karmanushtanam, all karmam, anushtanam of all the karmam is for purification of the self. Purification of the self, right? So, Kumarila Bhatta is an incarnation of Subramanya. He says this, that a benefit of all this on a much subtle level, Sushma Prayojanam it's called, right? What they wanted was freedom from sinful reactions. Because they realized that due to living in this world and due to changing bodies, transmigration from one body to another, and in different bodies due to activities, we have accumulated a lot of sinful reactions. And that is present inside us, in our subtle body. And that is why we are forced to accept another body again. So their intention was, with the austerities and penances, they wanted free from those sinful reactions. It was with that goal they have done all these things. This was their purpose, right? And because everybody knows, nobody will do anything in this world without a purpose, isn't it? Any activity what we do here has a goal behind it, some purpose, whatever it may be, right? So the rishis have done all their austerities with this goal. Which one? To get free from the sinful reactions. That is how they executed the austerities. And it is that process that purified them. You will see Vishwamitra Maharshi and many others performing very extreme penances in certain situations for this reason, right? So, now, and they instructed others as well to follow that route, to follow that path, right? So, now, if you ask the question that this is a very subtle thing, you can't prove this, can you? Rishis are saying to us, If you perform austerities, you will get purified. This is a simple statement. Krishna also says that in the Bhagavatam. And in many places in the Bhagavad Gita also. This is spoken like that. Austerities and penances are for purification. Now, if you say that I need a proof for this, there is no proof. You can't show any proof. So, these things which are too subtle, which cannot be proven by in the normal way, like in material life, with other things. As I said yesterday, that certain things you can prove in the laboratory through your experiments. But matter related to karma and matter related to transmigration and all that, there is no way of proving that to your satisfaction. That is where you require the help of the Vedam. In things which you cannot, that there is a statement in the Vedam itself. What it says is that knowledge what is not available in this world. That knowledge what is not available in this world by any other pratyakshena animityena, either direct perception or by inference, anumanam. Yastupayo na vidyate. Edam vadandi vedena tasmal vedase vedada. Now, when do you refer to Vedam? When you do not know something in this world, and you cannot know it by any other means, that is when you require the help of the Vedam. Pratyakshena animityena yastupayo na vidyate. Edam vadandi vedena tasmal vedase vedada, says. That means, Vedams, you are taking the help of the Vedam when you do not know what to do in life. Because so many things happens here. And that is where the help of the Vedam comes. That is when you consult Vedam. Things what you know, which is directly perceived with the eye, like the science believes in that, is it not? That everything that is possible to know through research and experiment and all that, that is fine. That is studying the mundane subjects like this. Mundane topics you can study like that. But matters related to birth, death, life after death, how will you understand it? From what research can you do about it? But rishis have understood this problem, and that is why the knowledge in the Vedam is related to that more than these matters, what we are busy with. And we are saying that we need a proof for everything. So therefore Vedam says that when you are stuck in this world, when you do not know the subtle things in life, which is only understood through dharmam, and then you will understand the truth behind it. Otherwise it is not possible. So that is the reason that Shastram is where pratyaksham and anumanam, both, neither by direct perception nor by inference, you cannot know things. In such a situation, Vedam will help. Vedam can help. So all topics related to karma, how karma works, the influence of karma in our life, why we got this human body, why somebody else got an animal's body. Both are jiva only. We are jiva, they are also jiva. But they got that body and we got this body. Why? You can't prove this by experiment, is it not? There is no way you can explain this to anybody unless you come to understand this, what the importance of Vedam is. This you won't find anywhere else. This is the Veda special position. Well, that is why Vedam is still accepted as the authority, because these topics nobody has been able to explain till now, and it will never be known through your research and study. Research work or laboratory testing or anything. You will never be able to get the answer to all these questions. Why we were born? Why we were born? Where is the answer? Why we have to stay a certain period of years in this world? And why we have to exit at a particular time? And after exiting from this world, what happened to us? How will you explain this through this modern science? How can modern science give an answer to all these questions? So, such a situations where you cannot get the answer, that is why where Vedam comes in. That is where you require the help of the Vedam to understand. And this has always been like that. throughout the time, throughout the history. And therefore, great personalities like we discussed yesterday, Yudhishthira, Parikshit, and many other, Ambarish Maharaj, and so many other personalities, their faith in the Vedam was so strong that they knew that what Vedam is telling us is the truth, nothing else. Because they also knew our limitation. Where will you find the answer for these questions? Today's problem is, we don't have an answer to all these questions, and we don't believe there is a life after death. And if you ask them, why are you born like this, there is no answer to that. Just by chance, they say. Vedam doesn't believe in this chance business. Nothing is by chance. Everything happens according to some rules behind it. We all got this body and there is reasons behind it. Why we have, one has got a male body, another one got a female body, one got a white body, one got a brown body or a black body. All this is very much under certain rules and regulations. Nothing is happening by chance. The modern science reject all these things, say it's all by chance, they say. Why you were born in a particular country under certain particular parents, and why one has to suffer through all his life for and goes through sometimes very hellish experiences in this world. How will you explain all these things? And this is where you have to have the faith in the Shastram and the authority of the Shastram. If you don't take the shelter of the Shastram, you have no answer to all these questions, and then you continue like the way, like the modern society is. So, sacrificing their own life and living that very life, what they were telling others to follow, they conducted their life in this world. This is the important thing to know about the Vedic traditions, right? And all the other things like name and fame, acquiring wealth, and being worshipped by others, they were not important for them. That was not at all important for them. And so, just like what I'm saying, this is against the history, what we have been taught at the schools and colleges also, that they're saying that, you know, these historians, when they evaluate the Vedam times and the Vedic times, they say that this yagam and sacrifices, what you find in the Vedam, is something that that people, how they learned how to cook first. In the same way, they say they have developed this knowledge about this yagam, in the sense that you know about cooking, what they say, don't you? They were just wandering in the forest, you know, the ancestors, our ancestors. They were wandering in the forest. By chance, they found some fruits and other things. Roots and fruits and other things in the forest. And then they saw some fire somewhere. By chance, they put these fruits into the fire, and they found it tastes much better after cooked in the, after putting it in the fire, and they ate it, right? So, and because they found it very tasty, gradually they started realizing we should cook food and eat. And that is how this technology of cooking has developed, which is developed in a big scale now, isn't it? So they say this yagam is like that. The rishis who were wandering in the forest, they found some things and they set up the fire and they put all these things in the fire. And they thought, if I put it in the fire, we'll get some benefit. And then gradually they added to it what benefits you will get. They manipulated their own interpretations on that. And that is what all this yagam, this is what they are saying about it. We are talking about famous yagam like Rajasuyam, Agnishtomam, Ashwamedham, Adiratram, Vajabayam. There are many, 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 many yagam spoken. And as I said yesterday, the requirements of each of these yagam is so difficult to follow, and can you imagine that the rishis had nothing else to do in the forest, sitting there and testing out all these fruits and putting them in the fire and checking out what is coming out from that? So this is how the modern education is. It is this education, the influence of this modern education is so bad that we just made ourselves to forget about the value of the Vaidika system, the Vedic system, authority of the Vedam. This is how we lost the faith in the Vedam. People started thinking Vedam is also another book what has been written by somebody for others to follow, and they have gone away from here after writing all these things, right? So when they were doing all these things, they got the fruits, they got the roots and other things, and they put it in the fire, and it took some time to cook. So at that time they had to while away the time, so they started singing some songs, and that is all the hymns in the Vedam. This is what they have come to the conclusions. This is how pathetic the situation is. And there are many young people who are going along with this idea, things like that, right? So, so this is the modern way of understanding the Vedic literature. You have to be very mindful about all these things, that with this background, people are coming. And when they, therefore, they felt that unless you sing some song, when you are bored, what you do? Till it is, cooking is completed, you sing some song. That is all the stotram they are saying. Or stotram in the Vedam, right? So, in this way, they developed their own interpretations on the Vedam. In this way, right? So, and their argument was, they were frightened about the powers in the world. For example, the lightning, thunder, and heavy winds, or heavy floods. They were frightened about all these things. And in order to escape from the fear of all these energies in the world, fear of these powers in the world, they developed this yagam for that purpose. This is how they have come to the conclusions about it, right? So, so common sense tells us, people with some intelligence, they can think through this. Can this be an explanation for that? It can never be. Why? To whatever extent, if you give time to look at it, that if you set up a fire, and if you put something into that fire, that some demigods will appear and bless me. And such complex karma, if you perform them, it will have its effect on my life after death. And if I execute this karma in a particular way, I can reach into the higher planets, right? All these thoughts have come to these nomads, or if you call them like that, these rishis, if it has happened like that. That is not acceptable, is it? You cannot accept that. That the rishis, what their way of life, what the historians are, the modern, how do you call it, these people who are studying, trying to understand the Vedam, way of life, their argument is that the fire was burning and they put these things in there and they came out that some demigods will appear. Krishna says this, isn't it, in Bhagavad Gita, that parasparam bhavayanda prema parama vapsyada. But all these things were not done at random. They were all done under certain rules, and that comes from the Vedam. So you got to seek the connection or the link between Vedam and the rishis. That you have to know first. You shouldn't just accept what the modern historians are saying. They are not able to understand all these things. The rishis did all these things completely under the scrutiny of the Vedam. Vedam was their guideline for all these things. All the complex sacrifices. Very, very complex they are, with a lot of things very meticulously arranged and difficult to follow in the modern world. Can you imagine how the rishis conducted all these sacrifices? Remember, when Rajasuyam was performed, Vedavyasa Maharshi was the main priest for Yudhishthira. Because there were several places where the priests who were involved were required some guidance in performing them. And Vedavyasa Maharshi was the main personality who helped Yudhishthira to perform the Rajasvayam in that time. From all these things you see that the rishis had such a perfect knowledge of the Shastram, of the Vedam, that they were able to guide the kings as and when they wanted throughout the history in their time. And you, from Ramayanam time, from Dasharatha's time onwards, you see Raghu performed many sacrifices, and then Dasharatha also, and many others later on. In all of them, who were assisting them? The rishis. Who were assisting them? The rishis. Rishis were giving all the help what was required to perform these sacrifices strictly according to the Shastram, without which it couldn't have been done. So if it was like that the rishis were supporting the kings to perform the sacrifices, will they be people like the way the historians are talking about? Can we not think all these things? Is it not? If these rishis were guiding the kings like Dasharatha, Yudhishthira, Parikshit, Ambarish and Prithu and so many others to perform those sacrifices, would they be people without any knowledge and like the way the historians are talking about them? It is not possible. So common sense tells us that their whole understanding of the Vedam is so poor that they haven't got a clue what they are talking about. And they have made this because they thought that life started only 2000 years ago, not before that. Nothing existed. For us it is not so. For us it is not so. For us it is yugam and kalpam before this. Goes like that, is it not? So the difficulty is this. Because of this kind of approach in understanding Vedic literature, they not only deluded themselves, but they misled rest of the world as well, on the same way. That's what they have done. Not only they deluded themselves, because they are looking at everything from their side. It cannot be, it is not possible otherwise. This is what they are saying. So they never had any faith in the Vedam, authority of the Vedam, nor could they accept that these Vedic sacrifices were so powerful, if performed, will yield the result what is spoken there. And the kings totally believed in that, and the kings who ruled them. We have examples like Prithu, for example. 100 Ashwamedham to perform is not an easy thing. 100 Ashwamedham, isn't it? 99, because Vedam says, if you perform 100, you will be offered the position of Indra in the heavenly planet. Do you think Prithu is so stupid that he would do this 100 and then, but at the 99th one, Indra got frightened about it. Indra comes and approaches, Brahma comes, Lord Brahma, and they speak to Prithu to withdraw, to. And Prithu was not interested in the Indra's position. Prithu wanted something more than that. That is what you find in the Bhagavatam. Why do we study Bhagavatam? To understand how their mind worked, Prithu's mind worked. So, if you study properly Bhagavatam and the rishis about their way of life, about the Shastram, this kind of questions will have no validity. Nobody will entertain these questions. But unfortunately, it hasn't happened. And that is the reason why we have so much problem about it. People are questioning the authority of the Vedam. How could you do that? So, therefore, he's saying here that they are finding it very difficult to believe that such a literature could exist in this world, Vedic literature. They find it very hard. As I mentioned yesterday, that Dharmam and Brahmam, the two things, what is spoken in the Vedam, does not discuss anything else. Even though Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Traigunya Vishayal Vedam Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna, isn't it? Krishna says that to Arjuna. Then there are in Vedam things that are spoken which is under the modes of nature also. And Veda Vishayam is Traigunyam, he says. But Vedam also says about the transcendence Brahmam, the transcended stage which is Brahmam. So Dharmam, if it is executed properly, will lead into realizing the Brahman. This is the principle behind that. Right? So, a lot of arguments against the modern presentation or modern explanation about the Vedic literature. All these things should be taken into account before you make a judgment about the authority of the Vedam. So now, because we have lost that understanding, proper understanding of these things, right? Modern way days also, people do a lot of different type of karma, and from that, there will be no pramanam for that. Generally, human nature is like this. If they see a few people together doing something, you will also join the crowd. You don't need anything, you don't ask any questions, you just join the crowd and follow them for some time. You may not have understood anything. You're just part of the club and go along with it. Whatever they say, that's acceptable. This is human nature it is. You can't blame anybody for that. Human nature is like that. If a group of people you find together doing something, and if they have got certain facilities and able to propagate it effectively, everybody else will join. Oh, now I got it now, because everybody else is doing it. Don't ask me why, I don't have any answer for that. One day, one man was distributing books. So somebody asked him, what is written in the book? He said, don't ask me that question. My spiritual master write the books, I sell them. That's all. You can read it and understand what's written in the book. This is how we are. This is, most of the situation is like this. That's no good, is it? That my spiritual master has written the books and I sell them and you read it. This is how it is. So this kind of philosophy and understanding won't last very long. After some time you lose your interest in that, without knowing it, what this is all about. So, when the rituals, which is in the Vedam a lot, all this yagam, homam, if you want to know these things in depth, for example, Rajasuyam. Rajasuyam is a very long-lasting yagam. The rules associated with that is in Mahabharatam more than in Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam doesn't give much details to it. It only tells about what responsibility was given to different Pandavas and what Krishna has done and how Rajasuyam ended, these things. But in Mahabharatam, they will tell you more about Rajasuyam. And there are certain descriptions about Rajasuyam separately on its own, which if you want to know more about it, it will tell you the requirements of Rajasuyam. But even then, you cannot perform Rajasuyam. Even if you have all these books, it's not possible, because you need the people who have the knowledge of the yagam, proper yagam. So, what we are saying is that that rishis didn't have any intention to cheat anybody. They had no motive like that. Whatever they have practiced, that is what they have left it for others to follow. And they have told us a lot of things what you wouldn't have known otherwise, about life after death, about the death itself, and about accepting the next body, and the travel or the journey of the soul after leaving this body. And like Shukha Brahma, she said to Parikshit right at the opening of the Bhagavatam itself, in the second canto, you remember, first thing, what did he say? The two kinds of liberation. He's saying there, isn't he? Do you think Shukha Brahmarshi was just fooling him, Parikshit, by saying all these things? Parikshit is leaving his body in 7 days' time. Knowing very well, Shukha Brahmarshi came there. Is it not? He knew that Shukha Brahma Sri Parikshit is leaving his body in 7 days' time. And as soon as Shukha Brahma Sri started speaking, the first thing he spoke to Parikshit, there is these two processes, Sadyomukti and Kramamukti, exist, he said. Do you think that Shukha Brahma Sri had he is just saying all these things to pass the time? Or do you think that Shukha Brahma Sri didn't know anything about it? He has cooked up something to mislead them. So without studying Shastram, without properly understanding Shastram, trying to evaluate Shastram is a big mistake. And that is what is happening. That is why we have got all these problems today. That we are thinking, generally people are attached to personalities, isn't it? Whenever you see a person, they like to go with the person more than the Shastram. Shastram is the one that will establish your knowledge properly. Tattvajnanam will only come from the Shastram. Persons may have sometimes personal appearances, and personal appearances may help. He is also, only if he is talking from the Shastram, whatever he says or does has some meaning. Kanji, Paramacharya was very particular about this. He said, when you talk about anything from Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, you should never bring any mundane topic into it. Always you should stick to the Shastram. Because that is the duty of any Acharya or any, even for the in matter, anyone who is talking, he should talk from the Shastram only, not from anything else. Bringing mundane things into it to explain the Shastram is the wrong thing to do. That is not allowed strictly. So, because Shastram is that which gives us the understanding of things what we don't know. Either through direct perception or through inference, what you cannot know is what is in the Shastram. And therefore, you have to know where Shastram is coming from. And while speaking, therefore he says there, that rishis had no intention of either for wealth or for name and fame or for being worshipped by others. They didn't compile the Shastram. They didn't compile the Shastram for that purpose. We were talking about the role of the Vedam, isn't it? Vedam and Vedangam. Shiksha, Kalpam, Vyagranam, Niruktam, Chandasya, Jyotisham. The six different limbs of the Veda Purusha. How they protect the Vedam from all other, in spite of all these arguments against the Vedam, Vedam still survives. In spite of all this, Vedam still survives. So, the due to influence of time, sometimes not with the proper understanding of things, in order to create faith in people's mind, sometimes in people do certain things in life to get them accepted. Like, you will see, especially in the today, in these conditions today, people perform this fire sacrifice, isn't it? Neither the person who is performing the fire sacrifice, nor those who are going for the fire sacrifice, fully understand it's all about, what's all about. They say that, oh, we have to go with some bananas there, and throw them in the banana, and chant some Hare Krishna, and everything will be okay. Now, what's the understanding behind it? These things are never thought, never spoken about. We accept it, because everybody else is doing it, so I'll also do it in that way, right? So, these kind of things, and you chant some mantram along with that, and show some mudra, people are impressed. That's all what they want. But beyond than that, nobody asks any question about it. And sometimes the person also not able to say why it is all this, in this way it is done, right? So, there are certain things which are done But you have to question the authenticity of a lot of it. Wherein Shastram says, this particular thing, what they are doing is authentic. But today nobody asks such questions. Everybody goes along with it, just gets it done. Because that's what we do, that's what either they'll say, Prabhupada said this, or somebody else has said that, and we are doing that. That's all they will say. More than that, I don't know anything about it. So, did the rishis set up all these things in that way? That somebody could, they have given us, do like this, and he put a rules and regulations one after the other into it. And Rishi said, we need all these things for this sacrifice. And so people thought, I don't know what it is all about, but the Rishis have said, I'm doing it. If this is the approach, then it won't help. You also have to know why these things are brought in. Rishis have given explanation of that, but people, under the influence of time, people have lost that capacity to study things properly and to inquire about it. We have lost all that capacity now. No, most of the people don't inquire about it. We just go along with everything, what the institution is doing or what the temple is doing, and we think that it is acceptable. It must be bona fide because the temple is doing it. It must be bona fide. Or a sannyasi is doing it, so it should be okay. He should know it. But if you only ask a little bit deeper than that, then you find how much the sannyasi understands what he is doing. And so this is the problem. This way, gradually, this understanding has left us. We have not understood that what is the role of the Vedam in all these things. Till you understand that, you will not understand what Vedam is talking about. In every activity what is performed under the name of spirituality, if you want to analyze it through the eyes of the Vedam and you get an answer, you will find it more satisfying. Otherwise not. So that tradition which I have spoken before last so many classes, that a tradition that was built up, which was never broken down even from one kalpam to another kalpam, what to talk about one yugam to another yugam, one kalpam to another kalpam, Vedam was not broken. That is the way Vedam survived. Exactly the rules of Vedam in the previous kalpam was followed in this kalpam. How? As I said yesterday, that when we go to sleep at night, we forget everything in the deep sleep. How is that all that knowledge comes back to us in the morning when we wake up? Exactly the same way. So, even about kalpam, kalpam to kalpam, kalpam, you know what kalpam means. Kalpam means 1000, chaturyugam is one day of Lord Brahma, and that is called kalpam. In that kalpam, so 1000 chaturyugam of Lord Brahma, and after that there is a devastation, and then comes the next day. Brahma goes to sleep for 1000 chaturyugam, and then he comes back again. So when he comes back, Vedam remains intact, knowledge is not lost, it remains. How is that possible? The answer to that is given in the Veshti form. That means in our sleep, whatever you forget, how it comes back. Where is the explanation for that? In the science. That you have, at the moment today, you know so many things about world, and you have so many understanding. But when you go into deep sleep, where have they all gone? And when you come back in the morning, when you wake up, everything comes back to you. What you have left yesterday. So, who makes this arrangement? Who is behind it? How does it happen? These questions we have to ask. So, this Veshti experience is the same thing applies to Vedam in the Samashti experience. That means that what is spoken, followed in one kalpam, remains intact in the next kalpam, and the only thing that remains like that is Vedam. Is Vedam. So, bringing it all together, what we have spoken so far, you can see that never existed a system like this. Which one? The Vedic system, in this world till now. a system that the rishis have created, and the system that has survived so long without changes and able to take all the shocks what comes from the world and able to survive that. That is how foolproof it was, that system they have created. As I mentioned before, the knowledge whatever we have lost in the Vedam is not due to foreign invasions or due to any other power. It's only due to we ourselves losing the faith and not studying it. And that is how Vedam, most of them, what we have lost. That's the only reason for that. But you cannot blame anybody for that. People will say, oh, others have come and set fire to the temples. But Vedam was not existing in the temples. It was existing in the heart of those who are studying them. And that could never be destroyed in that way. So a system like this never existed before, and and the analysis of the knowledge of the Vedam, like the way the modern historians and the commentators, how they have analyzed the Vedam, is all false. It's all false. So then, what else? That, take for example, Purusha Suktam prayers. Right? Purusha Suktam prayers is in the Rig Vedam as well as in the Yajur Vedam. It comes. And exactly same format, both of them. And they come, both these two Vedams were taught to two different rishis. And how is that? Many Vedic hymns, which are similar in some of the Vedas, they manage to be without mistakes, without faults. Reason is this, that because the Vedam's very nature itself is, those who studied Vedam were so honest about it, that they never misinterpreted, changed anything, they accepted as it was revealed to that particular rishi. Now the rishis in the Rig Vedam who received this knowledge and the rishis in the Yajur Vedam who received this knowledge, they were different. But when Purusha Suktam was revealed to them, it is exactly the same. So all this is indicating to us that the rishis naturally had a very high state of consciousness, able to capture these prayers, suktams as they are called, and they had no intention of cheating anybody or lying to others. Instead, they valued it from a higher level because their consciousness was such. They had only one intention, to know in life what's liberation. How do you come out of this cycle of birth and death? And this thought won't come to somebody unless he comes out of the body first. As long as one is thinking, I am this body, it is a little difficult to think about liberation, isn't it? Liberation comes, when does liberation, thought of liberation comes? You have to know this, because Krishna is saying there in the Bhagavadam that famous verse, Bandho mukta idi vyakhya, gunato me na vastuda, gunasya maya mulatval, name moksho na bandhanam. Now, is it a contradiction, what Krishna is saying there? Name mokshona bandhanam. As far as Krishna is concerned, the Atma or the soul has no bondage or liberation. But when you are a jiva, you have bondage and liberation. So keeping that in the mind, you have to understand that verse. Otherwise it will be a problem. Because after reading that verse, if you start thinking there is no bondage and liberation, if you make a statement like that, what happens is, all these things what is written in the Puranam becomes invalid, obsolete, isn't it? So, for in what respect it is written, you have to think that also. Atma is concerned, there is no bondage or liberation. But Jiva is concerned, there is bondage and there is liberation for the Jiva. When that Jiva Bhavam goes away, And when you become completely into the Atmabhavam or the realization of the self, when that happens, Jivabhavam disappears. It is in that stage that verse is valid. You see, that particular verse is only valid at that time. If you read that 12th chapter in the Ekadasha Skandam, you may be thinking that, oh, Krishna is saying completely different things. It's just like in the Bhagavad Gita also. Lot of things Krishna has spoken is in, with respect to the soul, Atma. Lot of things he has spoken with respect to the Jiva, Ahangaram. Jiva is also Atma. That's why we call it as Jiva Atma. But Jiva Atma has a cycle to go through. That means he goes through this birth, death, old age and disease. Jiva Atma has to change the body. Jiva Atma has to accept the results of its karma. Jiva Atma has to experience happiness and distress. So what Krishna is saying there is that as long as this Jiva Bhavam exists in a person, you have to accept all the other things. But when he talks in that particular chapter, Name Mokshona Bandhanam, there is no bondage and liberation, he is referring to Atma, not to the Jiva. Do you understand? That Jiva has to go through everything. And as long as we are Jiva, we have to accept everything what is in the Puranam, what is spoken there. It is all for the Jiva to deal with. Atma, under all circumstances, never suffers. Atma doesn't travel. Krishna has spoken that also in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? That second chapter in the Bhagavad Gita is important because of this. That people do not see these differences, what's happening to Jiva and what's happening to the Atma. Atma situation is like this. Many verses in the Achedyoyam Adahyoyam Akledyo Shushyam Evaja, all those verses, Avinashita Tadvidhi, there is no destruction. All so many verses is all about Atma. Later on, Krishna is saying, Jadasya Dhruvo Murtyu Dhruvam Janma Mradasyaja, that is all for the Jiva. So, in one place, Krishna is saying that in the Bhagavad Gita itself, you look into that second chapter, you will find Na jayade mriyade va kadajil nayam bhutva pavidu vanabhoya ajo nityam shashadoyam puranam na hanyade hanyamani sharire. Where does that verse fit in? It is referring to the Atma. So, while studying second chapter itself, you have to be careful with these things. That Krishna is saying to Arjuna, that Atma under any circumstances, you can't destroy it. It will remain forever. But Jiva's case is not like that. Jiva is subjected to death. Jiva is subjected to changing the body. Jiva is subjected to old age, disease, sukham, dukham. Everything is for the Jiva, Jivatma. Till we free ourselves from the Jiva Bhavam and come to the Atma Bhavam, that means we lose our identity as Jiva and come to the identity of Atma, you have to accept all the other miseries what is spoken there. That is the way. And that is in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has spoken like that. In the Bhagavatam also, Krishna has spoken like that. In the same way. In the same way. So, So, it is difficult to accept that all these yagam, yajnam, homam in the Vedam and all the karmam, a particular rishi or a group of rishis have written this down either through illusion or with the intention of cheating others or for the sake of name and fame. Any of those, none of them. That is the conclusion from this. Right? So, then, because this, some people who have this understanding also that the karmam what you perform, like yagam or homam, any of them, how will you know that there will be a result like this? Where do you get this knowledge from? See, there's a lot of karmam spoken in, isn't it? Karmagandam is full of karmam. And Karmakandam also tells you that performing this particular karma will give you this result. How do you know that it is correct? This question always there. So, therefore, did they have an intention to cheat others? That's how most of the people think about Vedam. That somebody has written this in order to cheat others. All this is not true, what is written in the Vedam. Right? So, that is where you require a little bit more deeper understanding of these things. Because otherwise, very easily to think in the wrong way and go along with it. You say like this, you start thinking about the Vedic rituals and start analyzing that way. And then you'll start saying the same thing to others and disturb others' mind as well, even if they had some faith. Right? So what they're saying is that they decided that the Rishi's understanding was this, that if we don't control people's life by limiting them to certain karma, because karma is our main disease, you know that. Karma is our main disease. Rajodigaha karma varaha. So they knew very well this karma is a disease, and as long as this disease is there, karma vasana will create a person to go and do all kinds of karma without any restrictions. So because they knew this, what they have done, they created a fence around everybody that keep them within the framework of certain karma. In that way, that karma is executed. Otherwise, if they do some karma which is vikarmam, or which is not authorized by the Vedam, the possibility is that their karma can create havoc in the world. It can create havoc in the world. So, the rishis wanted that karma, what it does is, it affects the mind straight away. Mind is the one which is behind every karma. Mind dictates and then the body does the karma. That's how it is, isn't it? So, mind gets absorbed in the karma, right? So they wanted to make sure that if somebody's mind is properly controlled, they will not get involved in karma unnecessarily. Unnecessarily won't get involved in karma. So therefore, they tied us down through karma. Through karma, right? So, because if they do like that, the balance in this world won't get upset. Otherwise, you can see what it is happening now. It's all due to people's bad karma inside. That is what is causing all the problem here. You can talk about this environmental problems, existent rebels and all that. Why? Why is this problem? Because of the karma inside. Karma has created this problem. And same thing in every field, if you like. Business, industry, all kinds of things, right? So, in order to protect this world from us, destroying it, they created this program, karma. They created this, right? And they put it in such a way that by doing these karma, you don't get entangled in that. You don't get bound by that. Right? So, but what the problem here is that this understanding didn't get through very well with people. Most of the people doesn't know this. Why rishis created so many rules for us in life? Why we should live in a particular way? Remember I was saying yesterday, how to bathe, how to sleep, how to eat, how to wash. Rules for all these things. Is it necessary to put down all these things? Why did they do that? This is the question we have to ask. They were so particular about all these things in life that only if you do like this, you are doing it properly, otherwise not. So, a group of people in the modern world, they started saying that the rishis have created all these things particularly it doesn't mean anything. This was their argument, right? And they also said there is no higher planets, there is no lower planets, heavenly planets or hellish planets, and nothing happens after death, right? And nothing is going to happen, and when this body is finished, everything is finished. These are the people who are studying the Vedam and trying to evaluate Vedam. People who don't believe in any of these things, they don't believe in it. They say that what Vedam is saying is all nonsense, in the sense that it doesn't mean particularly anything, and there is no higher world, upper world, heavenly planets, there is no hellish planets, and similarly there is no transmigration of the soul, things like that doesn't happen. This is their argument, right? And there are people who say that everything is over with death. And they say that whatever has to happen now. There's nothing else after that. This also, in one sense, is atheistic. Because if it is like that, even though they are astic, you know why they are astic? Because they are saying, while you are living in this world, you should follow the rules and regulations, and you should follow the injunctions of the Shastram and everything. But then they say, nothing is valid after death, everything is over. The other things about heavenly planets, hellish planets, and the laws of karma and all, that's all, they have written something, but it doesn't mean anything. It's not authorized. This is the way they look at it. Now, if it is like that, you can say that the rishis have done the greatest crime towards the human society, if it is like that, right? Because according to these people who are saying like this, what they're saying is that after the death, nothing happens, everything is over. In other words, in their analysis, Vaikuntham, heavenly planets, Kailasam, Golokam, all these things has no meaning for them. And that is also wrong. That's also wrong. You have to look at everything a little bit more in depth. Otherwise, simply, the difficulty is like this. People just read the book. And they say, this is mentioned in the book like this. This is not how you accept things. If you start accepting like this, after some time, you will get totally confused. Just because the book says like this. This is not the way. You have to ask the questions also. Why is he so? And Vedam is very good at giving convincing answers to that. So, what I'm saying is, in this world today, there are certain people who are propagating like this also. What they're saying is that there is nothing after death. But while you are living in this world, if everything is perfectly done, then you finally released from this cycle of birth and death. That's all they say. They want to close it there. They don't want to discuss about Vaikuntham, Kailasam, or Golokam, or higher planets, heavenly planets and things like that. If it is like that, the way they are saying, then the rishis have done the greatest crime towards the human society, if that was the intention. But it is not like that. Because that if you got a body, human body, right? And that body has come to you by accident. That's why people think like that. People think like that. I got this body by accident. It happened like this. I got a body like this, right? And in this body, I got a lot of sense gratification through this body, right? And a lot of connection with different sense objects and sense gratification. If you say like that, it is saying something similar that there was a pot of water. When the pot broke, all the water went away. Gone away from the pot, right? If the life is like that, right, the rishis would have told us, if it is like that, the rishis would have told us, you can eat whatever you want, whatever you like, you can eat, right? And you can live a life whatever you like. That's what they would have told us. But the fact that they told us that not to eat so many things, they put restrictions on that. And they told us also all the fasting they have introduced into the system, Ekadashi, Shashti, and so many other things, isn't it? All these things they have introduced, and they put so much restrictions on married life also, that you can't enjoy just freely like anything with husband and wife, but they put a lot of restrictions on the relationship with husband and wife in there also. So why did they do all these things? What was the reason behind it? That so many things, and then they said that if you don't follow these things, there is sinful reactions from that, and if you follow them, there will be pious results also. So to develop a whole science around the life, the amount of energy they have invested into that to develop this, then if you understand that, then if that was without these controls, if the world was allowed to go on its own, and people are allowed to do everything according to their vasana, and then if that was the case, what would have happened to us? Right? What they are saying is that these people who are saying in this way, that all you have to worry about is if you get into the jail, somebody puts you into the jail for doing some crime, find out a way how to escape from the jail. That's all you have to do. You don't have to think about anything else. How to escape from the jail. This mentality, I'm saying, that happens to people when you do not understand the complexities of the other sides of life, other aspects of life, right? So, they would have left us like that if all the other things what they have written about Vaikuntham, Kailasam, Goyalokam, and other things also, Pitralokam, Devalokam, Surgalokam, Nargalokam, so many planets and their description. They did not write it as a fantasy. It is not a fancy story that they have written for us to read and enjoy, right? So that is where you have to know the mind of the rishis when they have compiled this Vedam, that what was their motive behind it, saying all these things. And it will be unforgivable when you start judging them and evaluating them from our limited knowledge and our limited practice of this knowledge without anything. That means we will end up in false conclusions, wrong conclusions like that. And to tell somebody, now you see that Dharma Shastram, right? Dharma Shastra means that whatever that is in the Vedam, how to follow that in your daily life. That's where Dharma Shastram comes. Like you see this, we have this six Upangam, Vedangam, what they are called. So, four Vedam, six Vedangam. Then there is four Upangam. Upangams are Mimamsa, Nyayam, Dharma Shastram, and Itihasam, the four of them that is spoken there. Now that the whole Dharma Shastram is centered around all these rules related to following the Vedam, what is spoken in the Shruti, right? So, that Dharma Shastram is also part of the 14 Chaturdasha Sthanam, out of the 14, 4, 6, 4. Total, 14, right? So, when you study Dharma Shastram, you find there about this Loka Andara Gamanam of the soul. That means soul leaving the body and soul's further journey after that, right? And how a jiva accepts different bodies according to the karma, what it gets into its next phase of life, right? Pabam, Punyam, Sukham, Dukham, and different experiences of bhogam or sensual happiness, right? So, all these things, what you find in this world, this is called the Prapancha Vaijitra. Vaijitra means this variegatedness, in this creation. Different people experiencing life in different ways. Is it not? And certain, for example, something what is happiness for one person is distress for somebody else. And something that is distress for someone is happiness for another person. Why this variation like that? Why is it not the same for everybody? You will see this world itself like that. People rejoicing, some kind of entertainment if you look, you will find this. Certain things, when you look at it, it is so disgusting. And you don't know how people are enjoying this. But somebody is enjoying it very much. That. Why is it like this? So this variegatedness in life of different experiences in this world, where does that come from? That person's vasana is such that he enjoys that. This person's vasana is another way. He doesn't enjoy it. There is stories in the Puranam to tell about all these things. We think everything modern that comes from the United States is the peak of happiness, isn't it? That's the way it's presented. When Parikshit was cursed by the Shringi, Shamigha Rishi sent two brahmacharis to inform Parikshit about the curse. They came to Parikshit's palace, these two brahmacharis, from the forest they came. They didn't like it. They just didn't like it in the palace. Why? We were people, if we were there, what we were the two brahmacharis, what we would have done? We would have told Parikshit, we will stay with you. We don't want to go back to that forest to live with that Shamigha Rishi. This is much comfortable. Attached bathroom and television or whatever that was there in them days. All those facilities would be there. In the forest, they had to go to the river to bathe every day. There were no proper roof over the head even. They were underneath, in the cottage they were living. But they found it unbearable. It says, they found it unbearable when they came to Parikshit's palace. And they delivered the message and they quickly left, it says. They didn't stay in the palace. Why? They couldn't bear that atmosphere there. So, depending on the vasana inside, your bhogam or enjoyment also will change in this world. It all depends on the vasana inside. Accordingly, your happiness, it is based on that. Right? So, it is on that basis that the prayojan, the beauty, the utility of the shastram comes. Right? So, papam punyam, pious and sinful activities, they are known in this world and they are only known through the eyes of the Vedam. Without that, it is not possible to know. Right? And karmam is responsible for pious results or sinful reactions. Both of them, the cause behind that is karmam. Right? So therefore, but the people in the modern world, they are finding it difficult to accept many things, what is spoken in the Vedam. Therefore, they start modifying things. They started interpreting the Rishi's words in different ways. They were saying that that these lot of things in the Vedam is all Rishi's explanations. It has nothing to do with the reality. In this way, I'm saying about people, you know, those who are trying to understand Vedam, there are various categories of people in that. Some of them had some way of looking at it, others have different way of looking at it. So some of them reject the whole Vedam, completely they reject. Some of them accept part of it, and some of them give their own comments on the Vedam, what they see. All these are not fully able to understand the message in the Vedam. They explain it that way. Right? So, that is at that time that they are saying that this karmam what is spoken in the Vedam is all Rishi's concoctions. That's how they look at it. Right? And because this apaurushatvam, apaurushaya Vedam, they are not able to understand. That is why it is happening, right? And they are saying that this is all mysticism, mystic power. It is about the Vedam. They say like that. So, so this tendency is also there about to interpret Vedam in that way, right? So. Karmam, whatever that is spoken in the Vedam, right? The Moola Pramanam of all that is Vedam. Moola Pramanam is Vedam. And Vedam as the witness. And through an uninterrupted chain, this knowledge survived in this world. And in that matter, in that pattern, if you understand Vedam, only then all these things will make sense. Whatever that is spoken in the Vedam, to accept that the root of all that is Vedam, Moola Pramanam. And Vedam is a witness for everything. And that knowledge stays in this world through an unbroken succession of personalities who followed that tradition. And accordingly, if you study Vedam, only then this will all make sense. Even for Srimad Bhagavatam. Even for Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the strength of that Vedam that is flowing through Bhagavatam. It's the strength of the Vedam. Many things in the Bhagavatam is from the Vedam. Ajamila story is from the Vedam. Chitrakedu story is from the Vedam. Isn't it? And similarly, Vritrasura story is from the Vedam. And like that, many, many things in the Bhagavatam is also taking the message from the Vedam. Right? So, and now if you come to Bhagavatam, this Bhagavata Saptaham, isn't it? Bhagavata Saptaham is spoken in the Padma Puranam. Now if you read those six chapters in the Padma Puranam, Bhagavata Mahalmyam, you will find a number of rules associated with Saptaham. You must have read that. The six chapters in the Padma Puranam, it is in every Bhagavatam. So what does it say? You will find a number of rules associated with hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in Saptaham. About eating, about sleeping, and some of the things what's spoken there, certain karmam what you are normally doing, you may have to restrict that to save the time to hear Bhagavatam. It mentions like that. And eating habits, how one should eat only very minimum so that you don't fall asleep. These restrictions are spoken like that. All this has become valid only because Vedam is behind it. Vedam is behind it. Right? So, so while listening to Bhagavatam, we are talking about Saptaham now, right? If you start thinking that it is also for passing 7 days comfortably sitting together and listening to some katha and have to have some nice prasadam and go home after that, if Bhagavatam becomes like that, then that also has lost its meaning. Lost its meaning, right? So it affects not only karmis, it also affects devotees. These rules and regulations also. We shouldn't think we are devotees, so all these rules and regulations don't apply. It does apply, not only. So, devotees. We'll talk about devotees, right? Why are they forced to sit few days and hear Bhagavatam in this way, right? Because if you let them go, they'll go and do some nonsense. That's what will happen, first thing, right? So, therefore, they say tightly, devotee's case, you hear Srimad Bhagavatam, follow Ekadashi, and chant the holy name as much as possible. In this way, to keep them under certain framework, so that they don't go freely and do things otherwise, right? You shouldn't become a disturbance to others, right? Now, if that was the only goal, then that's not very nice, is it? Just to control a person's life, that you load him with all sorts of rituals, or engage him in some way and keep him under control, so that he doesn't go into... No, that's not the only thing. That's why we have to be careful about it, that chanting the holy name, or hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, or fasting during the special days of fasting, is not only for freeing yourself from the effects of karma, but it is also for purification reasons. Otherwise it wouldn't have been spoken like that. So, so something more, that because the Vedic literature has such a strong influence on your daily life, which you don't find in any other system. Veda means it has to have its effect on your every moment in life, in some way or the other. That was their system, right? That system has survived in this world, not everybody following it, but in certain places, under certain people, they managed to survive throughout this long period of time. Such a long period of time, with such a heavy restrictions. How did it happen? How did that happen? And this has not happened anywhere else in the world, like the way it has happened to the Vedic tradition. What has happened to Vedic tradition? The rules and regulations and the restrictions is very high compared to all other religions in this world, in the Vedic tradition. It's so much. As I mentioned to you, how to eat, how to sleep, how to associate with others, and how to bathe. So many rules and regulations, and so much restrictions in every aspect of life. In spite of all that, this system survived so long in this world. How? That question we have to ask. Isn't it? So, and no other tradition in this world were able to create a system like this, which existed for such a long time without any breakdown. Nothing got changed. Not only 5,000 years, we are talking about thousands and thousands of years, that a system existed like this, that Vedam they studied then 10,000 years ago is still studied in the same way. Part of it we have lost. That is due to our own inability to study. We didn't take it. People didn't take it. But a lot of it still survived. All the Upanishads are still there. So, the reason for that is, we have, for Vedic tradition, there is no one person who started it. That's the reason. One person didn't start this tradition. Right. So, and that is why we don't have that. Who started this? Nobody knows. This tradition. Who started this? Nobody knows. It existed like this. And it still exists today, in spite of all the other onslaughts from other sides. It still survived here. What does that mean? That you don't find a system like this in this world anywhere, which has survived through all the problems, and we don't even know who started this system. That is why Vedam is different from other scriptures. It is for this reason what we are saying here, right? So that word apaurushayatvam, that is what we are talking about, right? So if you go around all over the world, you can see whichever religion they are following, doesn't matter what religion they are following, whichever they are following, they are also doing some rituals, do they not? It is there in Islam, it's there in Christianity, it's there in all other religions also. Some rituals there, right? And they also don't have any explanation to those rituals. These rituals have come from the Veda. It's a Vedic rituals that has gone into other religions and taken a different format there with them. Because they don't have an explanation for that. If you ask them, why did you do this, these particular rituals in this pattern, what they are doing now, where did that come from? They don't have an answer. It's there. It is there. That's all it is. They don't have a shastram behind it to explain it. But it has gone into it. From somewhere else it has come and got into it. In other words, these rituals were a part of the Vedic worship, Vedic way of worship. And in that worship it had meaning to it. It was explained how these were rituals have come to, right? And they had that when it went to others, they started understanding that these rituals are required to please God. That's how they have accepted it. The rituals in the Vedam, which was explained in one way, when they went into the other religions' processes, they accepted it, thinking that these rituals are required for pleasing God. That's how they have accepted it. There is no other explanation for their rituals. So, what I'm saying here is that wherever you go in this world, in whichever religion, where Orthodox Church or Pentecost and anything, whichever you take, you will find this influence of the Vedic rituals in all of them. In all of them it has gone in. Islam also has got similar rituals. Some of them has gone into them as well. There's nothing wrong about that. We don't have any argument about that, right? So, this Vaidika tradition, which survived so long, and so many thousands of years before all the modern religions had come, it is quite natural that prior to all the modern religions, there was no other different religions, only one religion what existed. And it is quite natural from that religion, different rituals will go into other religions when they come out. It's quite natural. People will take it on board. Like, you can see our own example if you take it. There are so many things what we have borrowed from others. We have taken it on board. And we keep saying Vedic, Vedic, Vedic. But if you ask for the authenticity, nobody knows where it has come from. Like, there is always a questions about all these things, right? Like, I'm just saying this. Diwali was not celebrated in ISKCON before. Diwali was not a celebration for ISKCON. But Diwali has become a celebration in ISKCON now. How? So this borrowing things from other traditions is quite normal all over the world. It always happens. It's impossible to get rid of that. Similarly, you will see so many things, our terminology is what we use. We say the altar. Altar is not a word in the Shastram. There is no word. It has come from the Christian background. It has become acceptable and everybody uses that word altar now. Right? It's not, so it gets mixed up. Everything gets mixed up like this. Different traditions and method of worship and all these things it's quite natural they come, get influenced each other. That you can't avoid anything. So, what I was saying was that wherever you go in this world, you will find a big influence from the Vedam in some form in their processes also. Because this is the first one which existed for so long and it had in its effect on everything else which came out later. Even Buddhists also, the funniest thing is the Buddhists. What they did, they said they don't accept deity worship. As soon as Buddha left, they created Buddha's deity first and started worshipping that deity. So what do you do? And a lot of things they started borrowing it from the Vedic traditions. This happened 2500 years ago. And now many things in the Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism, all of them, you couldn't say that they are independent. They all have input from the Vedam. There's nothing wrong, that's acceptable, because if that's what keeps them in their life satisfied, they should follow that. But important thing is this, that they have to accept the authority of the Vedam. That's the only thing. They should understand that they are not independent. They also have to accept the authority. If they don't accept the authority of the Vedam, we will ask them all these questions, what they are asking about Vedam to them. They will have to answer that. You see? So this is the important thing, that religion, when you study in this world, that lot of things we are doing with some understanding, and we think we are completely free from other influences. It is not so. There is so many influences from different systems that has come in. And it changes the structure of the institution or the organization like that. And so that is unavoidable. That's the way world is. World will always be like that. So just like Vedam has influenced Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism, Christianity, Islam, everything had some influence from the Vedam at some time or the other in different parts of the world in different ways, right? So, that is as far as the Ajaram Anushtanam is concerned. Now, look at the philosophy. Tattvachinda. Philosophy is Tattvachinda, Tattvajnanam. Even in Tattvajnanam level, if you seriously look at some of the topics that is discussed in Christianity and even in Islam, had an influence on the Vedam. Without that, it wouldn't have come up like that. Whatever they may say, that they are independent and all that, that's okay. They can say whatever they like. But the fact remains that even philosophical level, not about Ajara Anushtanam, not about the ritualistic side. Ritualistic side, it's very well proven that Vedam has influenced it. Even on the philosophical side, Tattvajnanam side also, there are a lot of things which has gone to them from the Vedam. So, ultimately, they have to give us the credit that Mula Pramanam, the root of everything, is Vedam in this world. Everything has come from that in one way or the other. And that is the guarantee of the apaurusheyatvam of Vedam. Vedam is accepted as apaurusheyam because of this, right? And in order to understand Vedam in that way, you have to study it, hear about it, and think about it, and take the advantage of the literature what's available here, and understand what is Arsha Vidya is, Arsha Parambaryam, right? And you must remember this, that without logic, Vedam doesn't speak anything. It has its own logic, but you have to know that logic, what that logic is. You can't bring your logic and impose on that, as I mentioned before, right? And that is the way to complete this knowledge of the understanding of the Vedam. So we'll have a break. We'll continue after that.
Now we are having.
We celebrate the exam. What do you call this?
Damodar.
We celebrate that. Where does that come from? You know this.
I don't know. No.
What
freeing?
Panukuram says this. This prayer of the money, right?
Yeah.
That prayers are there, isn't it? But there's a big significance behind that, isn't it? It's not this thing, is it?
No, basically it is. These are all rituals helping you to develop bhakti. That's all, basically.
Uh-huh.
Only to develop bhakti in the heart. All rituals are for developing bhakti at the end.
But if you're doing this like this without that understanding, then how is the bhakti?
Understanding should be there for everything. Not only doing this, everything there should be understanding. Without understanding, doing anything in this world is become a karmam then. Isn't it? It's a bhakti sadhana it is. But now how this has changed. Traditionally, they will never use wax in the temple. You know, the wax thing. It's all just thing. It has come from there.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
So things like that you can't avoid. Now, I have seen myself these things. The Christian church, they are doing arati now in the temples, in their churches, right? Gilams, everything like that. And they even started making offering to the whomever they are worshipping in these churches. So in Kerala, yeah, they do that. And then after that, they started using elephants for the procession. Yeah. And on the top of the elephant, there's lots of people coming. One good thing is that it's coming from the temple. They looked at it, on the top of that, somebody is sitting with a cross. So these kind of things, you can't avoid it. Stop it. It will always happen. And recently, the Muslims have started the same thing. They couldn't go away from that because all rituals, its origin is in the Vedam. All the rituals, its origin is in the Vedam. Over a period of time, it all got changed. It went to Orthodox Church in one way, to Catholics in another way, Jacobites in another way, Benedict's group in another way, Marthomas in another way. These are all different denominations in the church. And they have all accepted these rituals in different ways. But origin of all the rituals is in the Vedas.
But that problem is when you speak to those people, right? They won't accept it. They say, no, it's all independent. It's not. How can you
independent in this way? They may not accept it. That's okay. Yeah. But they have to accept one thing, that the original source is Vedas. Yeah, they don't know. That is how difficult it is today. Everything is so disconnected from the traditions, so far away. Why blame them? Within ourselves, how many of us believe in the Vedam? Its authority, the Vedam. When we read Putrakameshti Yagam and Dasharatha having children from that, how many of us believe in that? Not many. Devotees also got these problems. It's not that they have got problems. They don't expect, but that is how far we have moved away from the traditions. That's what it means.
It's that, you know, the proto story, the Nisada race that was created from Vena's body. Right?
If you say all that, you will get arrested today.
What happened? This was relevant, about 2 or 3 years ago. And then one asked, how is that possible? Is it, you know, turning out of the body and first thing comes out of this?
That's right.
I said the concept behind was the vasna, the punyan bhavam that was coming out of it. Not necessarily the thingy behind. But they miss out that point completely. And the question is, how can you say Bhagavad Gita?
That's always there because...
Did you know the Nisad race in Bihar, they have Nisad race. They try to connect that with the same race or not.
Yeah. No. Better not expand it too much because it will create... They don't have the knowledge. Also, this modern interpretations of the Vedam has created a lot of problems. Indians are themselves misled by this. Why to blame others? To satisfy how far it has gone. They themselves have doubts about the authenticity of the Vedam. Only a few people are like Paramacharya didn't have any doubt about it. People like him, they didn't have any problem. But modern youngsters, they have got problem with the Vedam. As much as, so you couldn't say that it's only the other people are not accepting Vedam. Indians themselves don't accept it.
What are the modern Acharyas that we have now?
Some of them may have, some extent they have accepted. But everything depends on how rigid they are following themselves. That is the indication of how much faith they have in that.
For the ordinary public, though, it's very hard for them to judge because they don't have the understanding. So for the ordinary public, for them, it's very hard for them to see that those are following it properly or not as well, aren't they? You see what I'm saying?
That is there. That's there, yeah.
Because
you have to know yourself, yeah.
That's happening a lot nowadays,
In a
certain massive way.
Yeah.
Yeah. But present, they're going on now. It's Muslim open in Amistam, right? After every satsangam for the children, they'll have cake and they'll have pastry. In Amistam. They have a little cake and they'll have the pastry. Not prasadam anymore. That's what the prasadam is.
Yeah. We'll listen to yesterday class in LA. He was saying that Arjit was saying, yeah. He was saying that how to offer chocolate cake to Krishna. How to prepare, make the chocolate cake. So that influence you can't stop. It will always be there in this world. Things change all the time. Kalam won't allow anything to stay as it is. That influence of time in the world is such.
And then you feel left around there, can't you? You feel on your own there, don't you?
Yeah.
Because you don't get the help.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to accept it, but ultimately all these rituals are all for... why we started these classes were, the intention was, not that we were going to follow all these things, it's not possible today.
No.
The idea was that, to understand that, where Bhagavadam is coming from, where Bhagavad Gita is coming from, who is behind all these things? They are not independent of their own. This is what we have to know. None of the scriptures are independent. Not even Mahabharatam, Ramayanam, or any scripture is not independent. It all is dependent on the Vedam. What I mean is, Vedam is the background of everything. Without knowing that, if you study books independently, separated from the Vedam, you won't have the same understanding what you would have understood otherwise. Like this, I was saying today, that how the swan is separating milk and water. And this was a question in the class.
I had the doubt as well.
Yeah. And who was asking this question? The next temple president of Bhaktivedanta Manav. She was asking this question. And who was answering that? The guru who is there in LA. You can listen to the class. He said, I don't know. He said. So this is where the problem. We have to change our mindset. You can't blame them for that. Your way of thinking has to change completely to understand Vedam. Otherwise you won't understand that when you give the grass to the cow and the milk is coming out from the cow, what science explanation for that? What's the explanation for that? The cheapest thing you're offering and the greatest of all the benefits you're getting back. How would you explain that? These are Krishna's presence in this world, in different places, in different forms. Krishna's presence like this, doing this. Cows in that form, eagle in another form. And similarly, you will find in every medicinal plants, so many plants have got such medicinal properties. You go into some of these Ayurvedam centers, the amount of plants and herbs they bring from the forest, tons and tons of them, to make these medicines, which is used for curing certain diseases, otherwise uncurable. So, who put all these things in those medicine, in these herbs, medicinal properties? That is Krishna. Krishna's vibhuti is this is all. That's a way to see it. But, but because we got used to this technology so much, and we think that only through technology you can do things, you find it hard to accept many things like this in the Veda. Chedo darpanam arjanam vaumaha davagni nirvapanam shreyakaidava chandriya vidaranam vidyavadhu jivanam anandam budivardhanam pradipada purnamrda swadhanam sarvapna subanam param vijayade shri krishna sangeertanam namnamakari bahuda nija sarva shakti स्मरणेन काला एतादृशी तव कृपा भगवन् ममापि दुर्दैवमीदृशमिहा जनिनानुरागाः Tranarabishuni Jena, Taro Rabi Sahvishnuna, Amanina Manadena, Kirtani Yasada Hari, Nathanam Najanam Nasundarim, Kavidam Vajagadisha Gamae, Mama Janmani Janmani Shari, Bhavadad Bhaktira Hai Dugitwe, Ai Nandana Nuja Kingaram, Padida Mamushami, Bhavambudo, Krubaya Tavabada Pangajastida Duli Sadrasham Vijindaya, Nayanam Galada Shrudaraya, Vadanam Gadgadrudhaya Gira, Pulagar Nijidam Kadavabu, Tavam Mamagrahane, Pavishadi, Yuga Idam Nimeshena, Chakshusha Pravisha Idam, Shunya Idam Jagal Sarvam, Govinda Vrahe Nami, Padaradam Pinashtumam, Adarshanam Marmahadam Karodua, Yadatadava Vidada Dulam Pato, Malprana Natha Sunayevana Para, Sarvatra Govinda Nama Sangeetanam Govinda Govinda. Now we will go back to Garga Bhagavadam, which we stopped